questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is your host Musa al-Bahadili, and you are now listening to the program Q&A on Islamic beliefs. Joining us in the studio is our friend and guest speaker, Sayyid Muhsin Naqawi from the Islamic Seminary of Qum. Dear Sayyid, I welcome you and assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thanks for inviting.
Thank you for joining us, dear Sayyid. Sayyid, in our day and age, we constantly see multiple and very, subhanAllah, weird, I might say, and new plagues, diseases, and illnesses going around. Like, for example, in these past 5-6 years, we had Ebola in Africa, if you remember how many people died. And then we had the Zika virus in Brazil, and many more people died. And then now we have Corona, and many people are dying. So all of these diseases and waba, as you call them in Arabic, plagues, are these a sign of the end times? Are these a sign of the reappearance of the awaited Imam, Imam al-Mahdi, ajallahu ta'ala farajhu sharif? Or are they just a fact of life?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Yes, that's true. We can see many viruses or diseases spreading in the world. For example, there was a disease, SARS as well,
right.
You know, we were not getting any letters because they used to say that some people, like from special country,
right,
they're sending SARS through the envelopes and these and that.
Right.
We had these issues as well, and there are many other things.
Right.
Now, when we talk about these things, we cannot just say these are the signs of the Akhirah or, you know, the end of the world. Rather, these are, I'm trying to find a good word for it because it has a very bad wording if I want to use the actual wording for this.
A part
but
of
obviously,
life?
No. It's something which is created by humans. You know, the mess which is made by humans.
Right.
Well, if I want to use
this
the actual...
that we have done on Earth,
yes,
and in the...
American or in the British, you know, the way they use like this mess of mankind, they use other words, but... Obviously, we don't want to use...
ourselves, climate change,
yeah,
fossil fuel,
so
all of these things.
This facade, this corruption that we see, it's because of the human beings. They are very much interrupting into the nature, and they are basically destroying the nature. The way ozone layer is getting, you know...
it was damaged
obviously,
because
yes,
of the carbon emissions.
Damaging
right,
because of the human beings. You know, now
global
we
warming,
have less trees, we have global warming is obviously increasing, the amount of garbage that we have, the amount of noise,
right,
the sound noise that we create, the pollution obviously,
right,
the pollution is not just about the carbon, it's about the noise pollution as well, and you know, the stress that we release from ourselves, all these things are the factors that are making or changing this world into such a situation. And
right,
the amount of, you know, the laboratories, the way they are examining different things, and every day they come up with a new virus, and then although they don't have it, either they have the antivirus or they do not have.
Right.
Allah knows it.
Right.
But obviously, we need to see our own actions as a human being. That what is our responsibility, because Islam itself talks about the justice, and it talks about the justice in all fields. If I'm living in an environment, how justly can I live so that I'm not damaging the environment surrounding me? It includes the trees, it includes the plants. I don't know if our listeners knows that, you know, cutting a tree in Islam has the orders of killing a man, because tree is alive. According to some traditions, it is said when you cut a tree, it means that you have killed a man, a human being.
Right.
So it is just equivalent to killing a human being. And now we can see, like in the jungles, there are many people who are cutting. And today
we have the Amazon jungle.
Yes. And today we have come to this thing that We should work without papers, by texts or emails and all those, like paper-free, basically,
or least
movement
sustainable
that we have.
Paper.
Yes,
right.
This is a good movement. But obviously, we can also see that, you know, last year, because of coronavirus, when we had less activities outside, there were less cars, less human, less, we can say, like, public was communicating or traveling,
right,
or harming the nature, we could see that the nature was revived,
right,
realived. There were many rivers which had more water than before. The plants we had grown more than before. So it had an effect on the nature. And this is, I think, this is some of the signs which basically these are the alarming signs that tells us, that warns us, that look, you messed up the whole world. Now for a year when you had a break, you can see how nature came back,
right,
how the nature had recovered, yes,
right,
itself. So we need to be very much careful. Now, the issue is, you know, in the Islamic world and obviously non-Islamic world, because everyone is worried about the death and the, you know, last age,
right,
that they say it's the end of the world.
Right.
We can
see
many movies like, for example, like it was 2012,
very
end of
movie.
The world, and
right,
then we have Dune now coming up.
Right. Remember the Mayan calendar that ended in 2012, everybody thought the world is going to end.
Yes. So we had many movies made on this.
Right.
Why? Because we are worried about hereafter. We are
right,
worried about the end of this world. And this being worried is more from the secular system, from those who have material mentality, who
right,
are following the material view, worldview.
Because in their view, their
yes,
existence is tied.
According
to
their view, yes, the death is the end of everything.
Right.
And there is nothing after it. It's the existence and non-existence. So with the death, they think they do not exist anymore.
Right.
Whereas in the Islamic school of thought, in the other religions, there is another world after this world. And we are transferring, with the death, we transfer from this material world to something which is metaphysic, to something which is beyond this world. And that is the continuation of our journey, basically. So therefore,
right,
we are not very much worried about this. Rather, we are worried that when we die, we should die with having good deeds.
Right.
In our book of deeds.
Because right, we know we're going somewhere.
Yes, not the bad deeds. So
right,
we should die in a way that we were useful for this world, for the environment, for our family, for the
right,
society. And we were amongst those who will be known as good people, not the evil.
Right.
So this is what we think.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs on IRIB English Radio. You can send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
Now, on the other hand, obviously, we have many narrations there. The things have been said in the books as well. There were the people who used to talk about or tell about the future. They have said that, obviously, that when the end of the world will come, obviously, the people will die. And there are many other signs. So all these things are in the narrations, and we have it. Either the people will die due to, you know, the
are
messed
these,
up...
Sorry, say to interrupt. Are these correct narrations?
No, I'm just talking about general narrations.
So we have, okay.
Yeah,
right,
we have. Obviously, but all these things are happening, these wordings that spread amongst
right,
the people that these diseases are for the last time. Obviously, the earth will go... The world will go to the end. There are many
right,
different movies. I don't know, for the recent movies... There are many which are talking about the disease. Some movies
right,
are made on the coronavirus, and then people are isolated into their homes or lands.
Right.
There are some, obviously, who are struggling for a living.
Right.
So all these
right,
things we can see in the media, obviously,
Right, especially war is going to end the world, nuclear war and so on.
It's not the nuclear war anymore. Like, no one's going to use it because we ourselves have made so many, you know, diseases and these things, so which will...
That's what people fear most now. Right.
So all these things are there. I'm just telling about some of the other narrations so that, you know, we should be aware that why these things are made, why such things are said. It is based on some of the narrations like this.
Right.
Like there is a narration. Now, but on the other side, when we talk about the end of the world, obviously we know that in the Islamic studies or according to the Islamic teachings, we know that the end of the world will happen after the reappearance of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam, for whom we are waiting.
That's certain.
And obviously the whole world will be changed into a peaceful world the way it is corrupted now. It is said, like in the narrations, there is a verse as well in the Quran that before the Imam Mahdi comes, the whole world will sink in the corruption.
Be filled with corruption.
It will be filled with the corruption. And then when he comes, he will change the world.
Right.
And he will bring justice to the world, and everyone will reach or go towards the perfection. Basically, the journey of perfection will start, and they will quickly reach to the perfection. Obviously, we are still at the journey of perfection.
Right.
So these are the narrations that we have for the end of the world. And after he dies or get martyred, after that, there will be the end of the world. Also, we have narration that if on this world, if there are only two people left or remained alive in this world, they should know that one of them is Imam Mahdi and another is an ordinary man. So up till here, we have these narrations. But as far as it is referred to these viruses, to these illnesses, diseases that are spreading, it is because of the mess that we have made to this world, and we are far away from the healthy foods, the original, you know, thing that we used to eat, and we have these industrial, you know, made chemical made things, and due to which obviously our immune system is obviously it's getting weaker and weaker every day.
And on that sobering thought, we will unfortunately have to end today's program. I thank the dear Sayyid for his time today and for his insightful knowledge. I also thank the dear listeners for tuning in.
Inna fil jannati nahran laban. Inna fil jannati nahran laban. Ali wa Hussein wa Hassan. Li Ali wa Hussein wa Hassan. إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن علي
In remembrance of our innocent Lady of Om. In the name of God, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Salam and condolences to you on the doleful day of the departure from the world of our innocent Lady of Qom, Hazrat Mahsume, peace upon her, the Immaculate Daughter of Imam Musa Kazem, peace upon him, the seventh infallible heir of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Before we present you an exclusive feature in this regard, here is Ayah 72 of Surah Tawbah, in which God Almighty has promised the bliss of paradise to the true believers. Allah has promised the faithful men and women gardens with streams running in them, to remain in them forever, and good dwellings in the gardens of Eden. Yet Allah's pleasure is greater than all these. That is the great success. According to a famous hadith, true believers laid to rest in the soil of the holy city of Qom will enter paradise straightway on the day of resurrection without having to stand for the final judgment. This is indeed a divine favor for those of the faithful destined to repose eternally in the city from which it is said Satan has been banished forever, as per a lengthy narration of the wonders encountered by the Almighty's last messenger to mankind during his Mi'raj, or ascension to the highest point in the heavens and back to earth in a part of a single night. It is proof of the sanctity of this city on the edge of the Iranian desert, whose fortune was suddenly transformed from obscurity into a center of learning, worship, and pilgrimage by the appearance of a venerable member of the Prophet's household a millennium and 2 centuries years ago. She was the namesake of the Prophet's Immaculate Daughter, Hazrat Fatimatu Zahra, peace upon her, and her direct descendant in the 6th generation. She was the daughter of Imam Musa Kazem, peace upon him, the Bab al-Hawaij, or the Gateway of Wounds, who reposes peacefully in the sprawling mausoleum in Qazimain, near the Iraqi capital, Baghdad. She was a lady of superior intellect, virtue, and merits, to the extent that she is considered a pride of the Virgin Mary, the mother of Prophet Jesus, peace upon them, in view of her epithet, Ma'sume, which means the innocent lady. She was on her way to Khorasan to meet her dear brother, Imam Reza, peace upon him, who was forced to reside by the Caliph in the city of Marv, presently in the Republic of Turkmenistan, when brigands affiliated to the Abbasid regime attacked her caravan near the town of Save, some 128 kilometers southwest of modern Tehran. She inquired about the distance to the city of Qom, and on being told that it was near, decided to head towards it. The people of Qom, on learning that the seventh Imam's daughter was about to grace their city, were filled with extreme joy. The notables of the city went out to greet her and escorted her caravan to Qom, a tradition that continues to be symbolically commemorated till this day every year on the 23rd of the month of Rabiul Awwal. Alas, after a brief 17-day sojourn, Hazrat Fatimah Masumeh, peace upon her, failed to recover from the fatigue of the long journey from Medina, and on the 10th of Rabi Thani, her soul flew to the ethereal heavens. On hearing of the sad departure of his 29-year sister from the mortal world, Imam Reza, peace upon him, gave the tidings, "Whoever visits Masume in Qum is like the one who has visited me." The fact that Imam Reza, peace upon him, uses the term Masume instead of the proper name of his sister speaks volumes of the lofty status of his immaculate lady. Later, her nephew, Imam Muhammad al-Jawad, peace upon him, also expressed a similar statement, promising believers the rewards of pilgrimage to the shrine of his learned aunt, whose city, the Haram, or sanctuary of the Ahlul Bayt, as prophesied decades earlier by her grandfather, Imam Jafar Sadiq, peace upon him, is one of the 8 gateways to heaven. Without the least doubt, Masume possessed an exceptionally exalted status, and that is why Qum has become elevated in the sight of God Almighty. Born in the Prophet's city, Medina, in 173 AD, corresponding to 709 AD, her status as a scholar of repute was established when she was less than 10 years old. It happened that a group of Iranian pilgrims, after performing the annual Hajj to Mecca, visited Medina both for homage to the Prophet's shrine and paying of respects to the Prophet's successor, Imam Kazem, peace upon him. They had a list of some very important scientific and jurisprudential questions with them, posed by the people of Iran to the Imam. They were rather dismayed, since Imam Kazem, peace upon him, was not in Medina. They decided to hand over the list of questions to the holy household before returning with full confidence that the answers would be sent to Iran through a messenger whenever the Imam returned. However, to their surprise, before they could restart their long return journey, a servant of the Imam approached them with the scrolls containing the answers to their queries. They glanced at the replies with satisfaction. But to their utter astonishment, when they asked who had provided such interesting answers, they were told the Imam's less than 10-year-old daughter, Fatima, peace upon her. The Iranian pilgrims were men of profound faith, and with thanks to God Almighty for his favors, they resumed their journey. On the way, however, at a caravanserai on the highway, they had an encounter with Imam Musa Kazem, peace upon him, who was returning to Medina. Beaming with joy, they saluted the Imam, were warmly received by him, and during the conversation showed him the answers they had received from his young daughter. The Imam read the questions and answers and remarked with an expression of gratitude to the Almighty, "Fedaha Abuha," which means, "May her father be her ransom." Today, pilgrims from all over the world flock to her shrine in the city that has become the center of diffusion of true knowledge all over the world. To pay homage to her and seek her intercession with God with the words, O Fatima, intercede for me for the reward of paradise, for certainly you have with God a lofty status. Here are a few phrases from the standard form of salutation at her holy shrine. Peace on you, O daughter of Musa, son of Ja'far. May Allah shower His mercy and blessings on you. Peace on you. May Allah grant us your companionship in heaven and place us in your group and lead us to your prophet's fountain and quench our thirst out of your grandfather's own cup in the hand of Ali. May Allah bless you all. I ask Allah to grant us, through you, happiness and ease, and to place us and you into the group of your grandfather, Muhammad. May Allah bless you all. Truly, He is the guardian and is almighty. I seek nearness to Allah through my devotion for you and through my enmity for your enemies.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave radio, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa, via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kHz every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or BAD 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked.
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example.
Self-purification is the most significant factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by the late Ayatollah Agha Mujtaba Tahrani.
علی علیه السلام فرماید ثم جعل فی یدک مفاتیح خزائنه.
امام علی علیه السلام in a beautiful tradition states, Allah has put the keys to his treasures in your hands. But how? By allowing you to request from him.
فمتا شئت استفتحت بالدعاء ابواب خزائنه.
Whenever you wish, you open his chamber of divine treasures and take whatever you like. Please pay attention. You don't wait for Allah to go and bring you his treasures. No, Allah himself will give you the keys to his divine treasures. You and I had wrong thoughts about Allah.
راجب خدا بد فکر کردی شما و منم همچنین مثل شما.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, where we listen to a speech by Ayatollah Agha Mujtaba Tahrani. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States. Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
The strategic province of Ma'arib has for some time been a flashpoint of conflict between the Yemeni army and Ansarullah fighters on the one side and the mercenary forces supported by Saudi Arabia and the UAE on the other. Yemeni forces have been inching closer to fully liberating the province. Meanwhile, the leader of Al-Qaeda's branch in Yemen, Khaled Said Batarfi, confessed that the group's terrorists have fought against the Yemeni army and fighters from the popular Ansarullah resistance movement. He said Al-Qaeda terrorists have fought on 11 fronts. Yemen's interior ministry confirmed that the Al-Qaeda terrorists are fighting alongside Saudi-backed militants in Ma'arib, as Yemeni forces are pressing ahead with an offensive to liberate the city. However, Riyadh had denied such cooperation. The Saudi-led alliance had previously claimed it has crushed Al-Qaeda's ability to carry out attacks from Yemen. But in 2018, an investigation by the Associated Press found that the coalition has been paying some Al-Qaeda commanders to leave key cities and towns while letting others retreat with weapons, equipment, and looted cash. According to the report, hundreds of Al-Qaeda members were recruited to join the coalition as soldiers.
The United States and Saudi Arabia created terrorism, beginning with the Mujahideen in Afghanistan, and then moving these people that have been trained by the Central Intelligence Agency and the Saudis, with the help of Pakistan, to the Balkans, to Yugoslavia, destroying that country. And then again, they were rebranded when they moved into Libya and Iraq and Syria as ISIS or IS or Daesh.
The report also revealed that the United States was aware of the arrangements and prevented drone attacks against the terrorists. Add to it, Washington's logistical and weapons support for the Saudi-led coalition. This confirms that the U.S. is on the same side as the Saudi-led coalition and Al-Qaeda terrorists. A CNN investigation in 2019 found that Saudi Arabia and its coalition partners have transferred American-made weapons to Al-Qaeda-linked fighters and other terrorist groups waging war in Yemen. They used the weapons as a currency to buy the terrorists' loyalty. The U.S. itself is also responsible for continually sending deadly weapons to the West Asia region. Washington is also responsible for providing them with heavy weapons. The program was a total failure and only contributed to the growth of the Daesh terrorist group and the humanitarian disasters stretching across Europe. Washington is also responsible for the creation of the Daesh terrorist group. It's also accused of transferring Daesh terrorists from Iraq to Afghanistan before its shambolic withdrawal from the country.
I would certainly think so. I mean, the United States loses weapons. That's beyond belief. I think it's a way of saying, well, we either drop them to the Al-Qaeda people in the peninsula, or we gave them to the Saudis and the Emiratis to pass on to Al-Qaeda in the peninsula. So it's basically hypocrisy, which the Americans are very good at. I think they learned it from the British. But certainly, these things don't go missing. They're provided. And they're handed over. The Americans are operating in Yemen themselves, although this doesn't seem to make the Washington Post. So it's, yeah, you're right that this is collusion and it's cooperation.
U.S. and its allies have flooded the region with weapons that have ended up in the hands of terrorists. This support for terrorists has fueled a conflict that has killed hundreds of thousands of civilians and children.
We'll be right back.
tensions between Russia and the U.S. are on the rise again. On Friday, Moscow said it detected 6 NATO reconnaissance flights over the Black Sea over the span of 24 hours, reiterating its warning that it will defend itself against any threats along its borders. The Black Sea is a sensitive security zone for Moscow as it's located near the Crimean Peninsula, which was reunited with Russia from Ukraine in a referendum in 2014, a move that the West deems illegal.
2014 was a defining moment. Russia stood up for itself like it stood up in 2015 in Damascus across Syria. And this is what's of most concern to Washington in this search for a unipolar world, that Russia would have the audacity, the courage to stand up for itself.
NATO has recently ramped up activities in the form of holding drills and deployment of warships in the strategic region, in a move expected to provoke a response from Russia along its western borders. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov described on Friday as provocative the increasing NATO's activities in the Black Sea and the presence of Western spy planes in the region.
I mean, Russia doesn't have anywhere close to the amount of U.S. military, the bases that the U.S. has surrounding Russia. Imagine if Russia had bases in Mexico and Canada and in the Pacific. The U.S. would never stand for that. So what we see on full display here is U.S. hypocrisy in the same Russophobic attitude that has characterized U.S. foreign policy for how many decades now.
The Russian Defense Ministry said on Tuesday that the United States was setting up a multinational group of armed forces close to Russia's border in the Black Sea region. The Kremlin has dismissed a Western media report that said the U.S. was concerned about a possible Russian attack on Ukraine, noting that Russia has posed no threats to any country.
And, of course, the U.S. acting through NATO with its junior allies, constantly building up troops in Latvia, in Estonia, in Poland, across Russia's borders. So it's the Russians that have every right to be concerned.
In the meantime, the migrant crisis at the border between Belarus and Poland is also spiraling into another regional dispute involving the West at Russia's doorsteps. Thousands of migrants have been stranded along the border for months after being denied entry to the European Union by Poland. Minsk says Warsaw is violating international asylum norms by preventing the migrants from crossing the border and greeting them with a heavy-handed response. In face of escalating military activities near the border, Belarus and Russia held snap joint military drills in the area. Russia's defense ministry confirmed in a statement that its paratroopers were taking part in the exercise. Minsk has also threatened to cut off Russian gas supplies to Europe through pipelines that transit through Belarusian territory in retaliation for any possible sanctions from the EU. It would be bad news for Europe if Belarus moves to carry out the threat, as gas prices on the continent have already hit all-time highs and are vulnerable to any possible supply disruptions.
The United States has decided to bolster its military ties to NATO ally Greece. The military agreement was concluded during the recent visit of the Greek Minister of Foreign Affairs, Nikos Dendias, to Washington. The new agreement will remain in force indefinitely unless one of the parties withdraws. The military agreement will make Greece the U.S. military logistics center in the region.
Greece has been in America's orbit and has enjoyed a strategic partnership with America ever since the end of the Greek Civil War, in which the Greek nationalists triumphed over the Greek communists as a result of the military assistance which America provided to them.
The U.S. will also have increased military presence in the Alexandroupolis, Crete, the Tochoro, and Larissa regions. The renewed agreement gives the U.S. the right to access any Greek military bases and to expand the areas for the U.S. forces to conduct military drills. The U.S. Navy will also be able to go to Bulgaria and Romania without using Turkey's straits. The agreement will significantly reduce the importance of Turkey regarding Black Sea access. Greece has been trying to position itself strategically in the region.
The Americans are encountering some problems with Erdogan, So by America and Greece concluding this extraordinary military deal, it is a way of the Americans placing subtle pressure on Erdogan, not on the Turkish state, but on Erdogan personally.
In recent months, the U.S. has sent heavy military equipment to the Balkans and European countries through the port of Alexandroupolis, with plans for further military shipments in November. Back in November 2020, Greece submitted a request to the U.S. Department of Defense to purchase F-35 fighter jets. The proposal was welcomed by the U.S. In other words, it would not be surprising if the F-35s, which were not given to Turkey, were given to the neighboring country soon. The military cooperation between the U.S. and Greece comes amid a row between Ankara and Athens. Greece and Turkey are both NATO members, but they are at loggerheads over a number of issues. Back in 2020, Turkey dispatched Oryx Reis and warships, escorting it to survey an area between Cyprus and the Greek island of Crete in the eastern Mediterranean Sea. The mission was meant to explore oil and natural gas in that region. That led to an escalation of tensions, with the two NATO allies launching air and naval drills of their own in the waters.
The major reason behind this agreement, this military agreement between Washington and Athens, is a result of America having gathered some of its allies from the Mediterranean, North Africa, and the Middle East in an Eastern Mediterranean partnership. Now, what am I referring to? Well, I'm referring to the reserves of oil and gas which have been found adjacent to Cyprus.
Greece has also accused Turkey of acting like a pirate state in the Aegean Sea in regards to migrants. Athens has called on the EU to put pressure on Ankara to meet its international obligations. Athens frequently blames Ankara for failing to crack down on smugglers who send out migrants in unsafe boats from its shores in breach of a 2016 accord with the European Union. Under the accord, Turkey was to reduce the flow of migrants through its territory to EU countries such as Greece, return for billions in financial aid.
Well, of course, Turkey is a dangerously expansionist country. After all, Turkey illegally occupies the north of Cyprus. Turkey illegally occupies the northwest of Syria. However, there is very little chance of a conflict between Turkey and Greece. Why? Because both countries are in NATO and both countries enjoy a strategic partnership with America.
It is believed Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan is using the migrant issue to put more pressure on the European Union. The military cooperation between Greece and the U.S. would give Athens a greater leverage in its confrontation with Turkey. The Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has not made it a secret in the aspirations that it has to have influence in the entire West Asia region and beyond.
World temperatures are rising fast, and that is mostly because humans are using fossil fuels like oil, gas, and coal for their transportation, industries, and homes. The use of these fuels releases a great amount of greenhouse gases, mostly carbon dioxide, which trap the sun's heat and make the earth warmer. That is global warming. This phenomenon is leading to long-term shifts in temperatures and weather patterns, which is known as climate change. The dangerous trend is causing extreme weather conditions. The impact is being felt in many parts of the world, but the worst could be yet to come. Combating climate change requires concrete measures by the international community, especially the world's largest polluters like the United States and China. But scientists have repeatedly warned that global efforts to tackle climate change are way off track. Global warming and climate change have been under the spotlight in the Scottish city of Glasgow over the past 2 weeks as delegations from around the world attended the UN Climate Change Conference. Participants tried hard to find a way forward to contain what many scientists have called the biggest crisis of humanity. the world's largest industrial nations long struggled to find common ground. But an unexpected declaration by the United States and China this week raised hopes for a breakthrough.
Certain elements that will promote ambition.
The United States and China have pledged to work together to achieve the 1.5 degrees Celsius temperature goal set out in 2015. China's climate envoys, as the two sides hammered out the declaration following some 30 meetings over the past year. U.S. President Joe Biden and his Chinese counterpart Xi Jinping are expected to hold a follow-up meeting soon. The announcement was welcomed by the United Nations and the European Union. But global campaigning network Greenpeace says both countries need to take concrete action. Some experts have noted that this week's declaration was short on commitments that would significantly reduce the emissions of harmful gases like CO2.
Everyone is being very careful not to say anything definitive. There are a few dates, few specific levels things will get to, and few amounts of money that will go to developing countries. So there's pretty much nothing that doesn't need to be more specific. You know, we're all good guys and we're going to cooperate and make this work. Well, we've heard that before.
Scientists warn that the world faces a race against time. Climate Action Tracker Group has calculated that the world is facing 2.4 degrees of warming by the end of the 21st century. If the world fails to act, scientists estimate that it could even exceed 4 degrees in the future. That will probably lead to destructive heat waves, with many millions of people around the world losing their homes as sea levels rise. Temperature rises must be contained quickly if the international community is determined to avoid the worst consequences of climate change. That means global warming needs to be kept at 1.5 degrees Celsius in the coming decades. That seems like a far-fetched wish, given the record of the worst polluters.
I'm not feeling overly optimistic. I'm not really feeling optimistic at all, because it seems like this is just more grandstanding by the, particularly China and the United States, and even the European Union, who have gotten things, the developing countries have gotten things to this point.
All eyes are now on the world's largest emitters to see how they will act.
این چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می‌کند ذکر خداست، ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
Allahu ya Allah subhanallah. Allahu ya Allah walhamdulillah. Allahu wa la ilaha illa Allah. Allahu ya Allah wallahu akbar.
Imam Khomeini, in his famous work, The Combat with the Self, explains, unless a person fully acquaints himself with the knowledge of the Sharia laws and follows them faithfully, the higher value of morality cannot be attained by him. Without adhering to the apparent teachings of Islam, it is not possible that the light of the divine knowledge could descend upon his heart, and the wisdom of the invisible and the mysterious of the holy law be revealed to him. Sayyid Mohsen Naqvi, he has PhD on Islamic science.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. We are with another golden saying of Imam Khomeini. In one of his sayings, Imam Khomeini has said that today Islam, a progressive school that is capable of meeting all needs of man and solve his problems, has caught the attention of all Muslims of the world, especially the Iranian Muslim nation. Now, this is when Imam Khomeini has obviously delivered this speech, when he delivered, especially talking about the Iranian nation, that the search of Islam, a true Islam, the true Muhammadan Islam, should be in everyone. Everyone should go for the true Muhammadan Islam. And that is very important, because we can see there are many groups within Islam. Since we are looking for the true Islam, therefore we should strive for the true Islam. And this is the power of the true Islam, that the Iranian Muslim nation, they went for it, and obviously with their true leader, they were able to have an Islamic revolution.
Ya Rabbana, salli ala Taha al-Nabi wa alihi, sallallahu alayhi.
This Islamic revolution that we see today, after these many years in the country of Iran, it is because the Iranian nation, the Muslim nation, they went for the true Islam. And because they were trying and they had the leaders who led them to the true Islam, they were able to have this revolution. And why having a revolution? Why they're still having this country? It's because the Islam itself, the religion of Islam itself, it's a progressive school which is capable of meeting all the needs of man and solve its problems. We are looking for different systems, whether are they capable of meeting the needs of the mankind or not, or to solve the problems of mankind or not. We can see there were many systems, many religions which came, and later they were unable to answer the needs of the people. Whereas Islam is not such a religion, and Islam is progressing every day, and it's moving onwards every day. Inshallah, may Allah give us tawfiq to follow the Islam in its true way.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
English Radio.